We are the Forsaken. Forsaken.
You're listening to a Corpse Run Radio minicast.
From collecting to leveling to battling, welcome to Lita's Littlest Pet Shop for all of your pet battling needs.
Hello, sweeties. You know what time it is. That's right. It's pet collecting time. Yay! And today we are going to talk about our cute little humanoid pet called the Anubiseth Idol. Now, this is a humanoid pet, as I said, and you can get this from a drop off Emperor Veklar in the Temple of Encourage. Now, the drop rate is apparently 1 in 10. So, good luck with farming this one. But it's a fantastic pet for having in your pet battling teams. So, let's have a little look at this one. Now, the animation of the Anubiseth Idol is, it just looks around. And for the sound, the vocalization is when you click on it. Okay, let's have a look at our pet battle information. Now, the slot 1 abilities. So at level 1, you get Crush. This is 100% hit chance, and it crushes the enemy, dealing humanoid damage. This is great against Dragonkin and not so good against Beast. Then at level 10, you get Demolish. This is a 50% hit chance, and it rams the target, dealing mechanical damage. Great against Beast and not so good against Elemental. Now, the slot 2 abilities. At level 2, you get Sandstorm. This is a 5-round cooldown. It's 100% hit chance. This deals flying damage and turns the weather into a sandstorm for 5 rounds. During a sandstorm, all pets take less damage and their accuracy is reduced by 10%. Now, this is very good against Aquatic and not so good against Dragonkin. Then, at level 15, you can get Stone Skin. This reduces up to so much damage from each attack against you, and this will last 5 rounds. Now, the slot 3 abilities. At level 4, you get Deflection. This is a 3-round cooldown. It avoids enemy attacks made during the round it is used. This ability always goes first. Then at level 20, you get Rupture, and it is a 4-round cooldown with 100% hit chance. Stone spikes erupt from the ground, dealing elemental damage, and has a 25% chance to stun the target. Now, this is great against mechanical and not so good against critter. Now, the passive modifiers for a humanoid. Humanoids recover 4% of their maximum health if they have dealt damage this round. Now, the damage taken is 50% up from undead abilities and 33% down from critter abilities. Anyway, that is all from me today. I hope you have great fun with your pet battles and your pet collecting, and we will talk to you later. Bye!
Hello and welcome. Today I am going to talk a little about Winterspring. Winterspring is one of the most remote zones that we have in the game, at least if you count getting there on ground mount, which back in the day of vanilla content was the way to get around. You have to go through the Timbermaw tunnel to get there, which means you have to either be a druid and teleport to Moonglade, which is the easiest way, or if you're not a druid, you have to run through the entirety of Fellwood until you reach the northern entrance to the Timbermaw Tunnel and run all the way through until you get to Winterspring. Now, running through the tunnel in itself wasn't the problem. The big problem was that the Timbermaw Firbolgs, they were quite unfriendly to people that they didn't know. And they still are. Nowadays though, Blizzard has soothed their bloodlust, let's put it that way, in that they don't attack you even though you are of unfriendly rep with them. Back in the day, you had to farm rep to be able to enter and go through the Timbermaw Hold without taking serious damage, and with a 99.99% certainty you would die if you weren't at least neutral rep with those firbolgs. You had to start way down in Fellwood and do a repeat turning quest by farming some feathers and doing that over and over and over again until you reached a certain level. And then you could go up, well, you could theoretically continue farming there till the end of days, basically, until you reach the required rep level, but up near the northern entrance to the Timbermaw Hold, you had another opportunity to farm some more rep, gain higher amounts of rep, because the mobs were of higher level, so it went faster if you went up there and did the rest of the farming up north. Winterspring is one of the zones that have been affected somewhat moderately by the Cataclysm, although the Cataclysm redesign of the zone has been very heavy, in that in the early days of Vanilla through Wrath of the Lich King, we had some areas that were part of Winterspring that are now part of the zone called Mount Hyjal. This one is called Dark Whisper Gorge. And that is one of the key parts of lore that we have, that we had back in vanilla content, since we had quite a bit of elite activity there. And if you wanted to farm, for example, thorium, that was a perfect zone there to farm thorium there, although you had to be quite careful if you were only 60, because all the elite demons that were running around there were giving you quite a hard time. Another thing that was part of the Dark Whisper Gorge was the entrance to Hyjal. It was an opening in the mountains, and people were really into cheating their way into the old Mount Hyjal before it was a valid zone after the Cataclysm revamp. You had to go to Dark Whisper Gorge also to do some very special quests. Also, if you were on the quest line for Thunderfury, Blessed Blade of the Windseeker, you could, if you had any of the quest items you needed to finish the quest, you could go and speak to High Elf Earthcaller Frenzal, because he would enlighten you on how you could get to smelt elementium. And back in the day it wasn't as easy as it is now, so that was quite an interesting journey in itself to get to that NPC. But after the Cataclysm, as I said earlier, this zone was detached from Winterspring and added to Mount Hyjal. I still don't get why they did it. They needed some space, apparently, and their design of Mount Hyjal wasn't big enough, I guess. So they cut the part of Winterspring and added it to Mount Hyjal. Very strange that. As for Winterspring itself, let's quickly run down the facts for that. The major city of the zone is Avalok, one of the four goblin cities in the game, and that's also the one flight point that we have in the zone. There is a fairly heavy night elf presence in the zone as well, in that we have quite a few ghosts of the night elves down in Lake Kel'Thiril, and we have the Starfall village. Those two areas represent the night elf presence in the zone. We have one unique faction, if you want to call it that. It is a faction, a rep faction, and that's the Frost Saber faction, where you as a alliance player can go and get your Frost Saber mount if you do a 20-day long daily quest line. Originally it was quite different, in that you had to go and kill stuff and turn in some loot you got over and over and over again until you reach Exalted. But when in Cataclysm, when they added the Horde equivalent questline in Un'Goro Crater, they streamlined it and made them identical, literally. So it was just making it easier. I'm not saying it was better, because I really liked the way that you had to grind your way to Exalted in comparison to the 20-day thing. That it's way too easy in my opinion. But anyway, we also have in the northern part, not eastern part that is, the Hidden Grove and the southern entrance of that, where you back in the day had to go as part of the quest line to get your Warlock mount, your Warlock Epic mount. You had to go and kill some owl beasts to get their blood, and that was, I think we had to get 30, as far as I can remember, and that was quite a adventure. The entire quest line was an adventure, but this part was really murdering, slaughtering, extinguishing the entire population of owl beasts, which was really satisfying and frustrating at the same time. But yeah, that's me reminiscing in old times. I really want that questline back, Blizzard, please. So just on a side note, every time I listen to the song called My Mount and I from Charm, I get this warm, fuzzy feeling in my stomach when I think back to when I wander around that area and slaughter all these owl beasts. Is just like reliving it mentally. It was just so awesome. But there's so many quest lines and so many things that the pre-Cataclysm Warcraft had that we don't have anymore. I'm not saying I want the vanilla style of play back altogether, but quite a few things were great. Really great. And I really miss them. And many people that I talk to and that I know of really miss these special things. And I'm really sad about Blizzard taking them away. But okay, end rant. Now, alright, I would say that this is it for today. As always, if you have any questions or suggestions regarding any of my segments, you can tweet me at GrandNegus1. You can write me an email at towerofcommerce@gmail.com, or you can write into the show corpserunradio@gmail.com. This has been Grand Negus, Rule of Acquisition, number 19. Satisfaction is not guaranteed. Bye, guys.
Hello, everyone. Last week, we started the story of the Ashbringer, where we talked about its creation, the massive damage it did to the Scourge, and eventually its corruption into darkness. We ended the storyline with Darion Mograine stabbing himself with the blade, which saved the day and earned him a victory at Light's Hope Chapel, but it also allowed Kel'Thuzad to take Darion and turn him into a Death Knight and an agent of the Lich King. This week, we'll continue the storyline, but first I want to talk about how all of this happened within the game, because once upon a time, it was actually possible to obtain the corrupted Ashbringer for ourselves. Let's begin, shall we? Way back when, during Classic World of Warcraft, a rumor was quickly spreading across the lands. Those that battled within Aldrich Valley, they were able to pick up a book called Ned Pagel's Guide to Extreme Angling, and in the book, it was missing every single page but the last one, which read the following. And that's where you'll find the legendary sword of the Scarlet High Lord, Ashbringer. Ain't it amazing what you run into an ordinary day of fishing? Naturally, this sparked a desire for fishing across the land, and many people within the game, they started to speculate and come up with crazy theories as to how you could obtain the blade with fishing. Surely this book was a hint given by Blizzard. Surely only those that would spend days upon days casting out their line, trying out their luck, surely they would be worthy of the weapon. But sadly, that was not the case. This was just Blizzard trolling the players, because the blade would eventually become obtainable when the first version of Naxxramas opened up within the game. Now in the comics, as I told you last week, it was Darien and his crew that assaulted Naxxramas, but in game, we were the ones, or at least a very few of us, who were actually able to do the raids, and those that did, those that were able to take down the four horsemen with Alexandros Mograine as one of the bosses, they got a chance at getting the corrupted Ashbringer. The blade was epic, it was amazing, it would even whisper to you from time to time. And if you took the blade to the Scarlet Monastery, similar to how Darien did it within the comics, then you'd be able to see all the Crusaders kneel down, Mograine he popped up out of the blade, and he quickly passed judgment upon his eldest son. Even Fairbanks got his own event. Normally you could just kill him as an extra boss hidden behind a secret door, but with the Ashbringer in hand, he would tell you the tale behind Renault's betrayal and the corruption of the Ashbringer. He also states that Mograine had another son, Darien of course, who resides within Outland, and he has the ability to forge a new Ashbringer. With the release of the Burning Crusade, the Dark Portal opened up, and we were able to go into Outlands ourselves. We were searching for the other son, but it seems like Blizzard had a change of heart when it comes to this storyline. Many speculated that David Wayne, which you can find within Tedokar Forest, that he was the other son of Mograine, since he had the red hair, he can forge weapons, and he felt destined to be part of something larger, but he never forged a new Ashbringer. With Wrath of the Lich King, we found out that Blizzard did indeed change their minds, and that Darien was now part of the Scourge.
A hero, that's what you once were. You stood boldly against the shadow and purchased another dawn for the world with your life. But the evil you fought is not so easily banished. The victory you claimed, not so easily held. For now, the specter of death looms above the world yet again, and it has found new champions to bring about its final reign. Knights of darkness, wielding runes of death and destruction, bound by the will of the Lich King. This is the hour of their ascension. This is the hour of your dark rebirth.
Fallen heroes of the past were taken by the Lich King and his forces, and they were turned into Death Knights. That adventure begins within the Ebon Hold, and there we got our first look at High Lord Darien Mograine holding the corrupted Ashbringer and listening to its whispers. The Lich King has sent them on the task of eliminating some of the Scarlet Crusade forces, and they have taken up residence within an area still remarkably untouched by the plague. During the DK starting area, we find out that the Crusade is getting ready to travel to Northrend, and it would now call themselves the Scarlet Onslaught. Naturally, they don't stand a chance against the force of the Lich King. Some clever planning, some devastating power and weapons, and this last bit of uncorrupted area, it was quickly turned into Plague Lands as well. With that area conquered, it was time to set our eyes upon the true goal of the Lich King, assaulting Light's Hope Chapel.
Soldiers of the Scourge! Death Knights of Acherus, minions of the darkness, hear the call of the High Lord! Rise! The skies turn red with the blood of the fallen! The Lich King watches over us, minions! Leave all the ashes and misery in your destructive wake!
Stand fast, brothers and sisters! The light will prevail!
Where once Darien was prepared to lay down his life to defend the chapel, now he was actually assaulting the place himself, but the Ashbringer did not want to cooperate.
Obey me, Blade!
I was trying to figure out why the Blade was unwilling to cooperate with Darien, since in the past it had no problem with killing innocents or killing those wielding the lights. In its corrupted state, it was more than ready to fight for Alexandros Mograine during his time as one of the horsemen. So I did a bit of research, and some speculate that it was because they were fighting upon holy grounds. Remember that they had moved a thousand of the most righteous and noble heroes of the past to prevent them from being turned into the undead. It's possible that this area had an effect upon the Blade, similar to how they were able to turn it from darkness into light by shooting light at it. Another possibility, and this is purely my speculation, is that the spirit of Alexandros Mograine was still within the Blade, and Darien sacrificing himself has cleansed his father of the darkness. This did not release his spirit from the Blade though, since after the fight at the chapel, we actually see his spirit show up. He talks to his son, the Lich King showed up, he absorbed Alexandros' soul within Frostmourne, but I personally think that his father, he was trying to prevent Darien from committing this act. Once again, that's just my interpretation though. Either way, the assault upon Lighthope Chapel, it draws out one of the greatest paladins in history, Tyrion Fordring, just as the Lich King had planned. Last we heard about Tyrion was that he was living in exile. Darien showed up at his home to find a way to redeem his father, and he asked Tyrion to come back to the Argent Dawn. Tyrion actually showed up in an attempt to save Lighthope Chapel. Darien, he stabbed himself with the Blade, and after that Tyrion returned to his hermit life, but he stayed in touch with the Argent Dawn. During Classic World of Warcraft, adventurers could actually find Tyrion living out his life as an exile, and Tyrion recruited heroes to save his son from the Scarlet Crusade. With the death of Renaud Mograine, the Crusade required a new High Lord, and the Dreadlord Belnazar, he chose Talon Fordring to be this new puppet. With our help, Talon realized that the Scarlet Crusade was corrupted. He tried to step away from it, but he was killed by Grand Inquisitor Isilion before he could make his escape. In the final confrontation, we fight with Isilion, and Tyrion Fordring, he shows up to avenge his only son. Isilion is taken down, and upon doing so, Tyrion says, "Too long have I sat idle, gripped in this haze, this malice, laminating what could have been, what should have been. Your death will not have been in vain, Talon. A new order is born on this day. An order which will dedicate itself to extinguishing the evil that plagues this world. An evil that cannot hide behind politics and pleasantries. This I promise. This I vow." Tyrion plans to reform the original Order of the Silver Hand as a force of good in the world, and he shows up during the assault on Lighthope Chapel, and he battles with Darien and the forces of the Scourge. They don't stand a chance upon this holy ground. The light is with the Argent Dawn, and with the Blade fighting against him, Darien realizes that all is lost.
"Stand down, Death Knights! We have lost the light, this place. No hope!"
"Have you learned nothing, boy? You have become all that your father fought against. Like that coward Arthas, you allowed yourself to be consumed by the darkness, the hate, feeding upon the misery of those you tortured and killed. Your master knows what lies beneath the chapel. It is why he dares not show his face. He sent you and your Death Knights to meet their doom, Darien. What you are feeling right now is the anguish of a thousand lost souls. Souls that you and your master brought here. The light will tear you apart, Darien."
"Save your breath, old man. It might be the last you ever draw."
"My son."
"Father!"
"My dear, beautiful boy."
"What?
Father, you have returned."
"My son, there will come a day when you will command the Ashbringer, and with it, mete out justice across this land. I have no doubt that when that day finally comes, you will bring pride to our people, and that Lordaeron will be a better place because of you. But, my son, that day is not today. Do not forget."
"Touching. He's mine now."
"You betrayed me. You betrayed us all, monster. Face the might of Mograine."
"Pathetic.
You're a damned monster, Arthas!
You are right, Vordring. I did send them in to die. Their lives are meaningless. But yours... How simple it was to draw the great Tyrian Vordring out of hiding. You've left yourself exposed, Paladin. Nothing will save you.
It was never the Lich King's intention to actually win this battle. All he wanted to do was draw out the mighty Tyrian Vordring and remove him from the game. Unfortunately for the Lich King, Darion had other plans in mind. He tosses the Ashbringer to Tyrion, and upon grabbing it, Tyrion's light and conviction, it manages to cleanse the blade and turn it into the weapon it once was. One mighty blow pushes the Lich King back and forces him to retreat, and upon doing so, Tyrion makes another promise.
We have all been witness to a terrible tragedy. The blood of good men has been shed upon this soil. Honorable knights slain defending their lives, our lives. And while such things can never be forgotten, we must remain vigilant in our cause. The Lich King must answer for what he has done and must not be allowed to cause further destruction in our world. I make a promise to you now, brothers and sisters. The Lich King will be defeated. On this day, I call for a union. The Argent Dawn and the Order of the Silver Hand will come together as one. We will succeed where so many before us have failed. We will take the fight to Arthas, and we will tear down the walls of Ice Crown. The Argent Crusade comes for you, Arthas!
So too do the Knights of the Ebon Blade. Although our kind has no place in your world, we will fight to bring an end to the Lich King. This I vow!
And so the Argent Crusade and the Knights of the Ebon Blade, they combine their might in the war against the Lich King. Tyrion writes out letters for new Death Knights to take with them as they meet respective leaders so that they wouldn't simply be cast out as undead. Now getting to Northrend, it was simple enough, but bringing the Ashbringer and Tyrion himself, that required a plan, since the Lich King knew that these two were a great threat to his plans. Within the Howling Fjord, we find a cleric of the Crusade, and as you do the quest, you're sent in to the Utgard Catacombs. In the depths below, Ares, the Oathbound, he gasps for air as he tries to speak. He's an envoy of the Argent Crusade, charged with a sacred duty, but the artifact that he was trying to deliver has been hurled far below into the Den of the Fallen. Ares places a blessing of the light upon us, which is so strong and so bright that none of the undead are able to even get close. We collect the sacred artifact, we bring it back to Ares, but it's too late to do anything for him. His time has come, the light will surely embrace him, and his final wish is for us to fulfill his oath and bring the artifact back to Lord Irulan Trueblade. Upon returning the artifact, we find out that it was actually the Ashbringer that was nearly lost to us, and High Lord Tyrion Vordring removes his disguise. To get him and the blade safely to Northrend, they came up with a plan to travel separately, with the hope of going undetected and not drawing any unwanted attention from the Lich King. Many have already given their lives to the redemption of the blade, and now even more have died to bring it to Northrend. Tyrion, he's done with playing hide and seek, he's done with letting others sacrifice themselves for the greater good. It was his burden to bear, and now that he's reunited with the Blade, it's time to assault Northrend and take the battle to Arthas. Several storylines and several campaigns took place across Northrend, but this video it's focused upon the Ashbringer, so I'll try to focus on that. We help out Tyrion and the Crusade with building up a forward base within Icecrown, and we help the Knights of the Ebonblade with taking the Shadow Vault away from the Lich King. During our questing, we're sent below Icecrown Citadel to blow up a bomb and expose a weakness within the structure. They're unsure why it's there, but captured diagrams, it shows an orifice leading several hundred feet into the ground. It seems to be very important to the Scourge, and it could be a great opening within the defense of the Citadel, but not all goes to plan. The fuse is way too short. We fall down way below the Citadel into Nazanakh, the Forgotten Depths. Thankfully for us, a pool of water prevents us from dying a horrible death, and within the pool rests a strange pulsing object covered in a thick layer of ice. As we touch the object, a horrible pain courses through our body. It feels as if the hand has been cut, yet there's no visible wounds. As we try to collect our thoughts, a strange boy waiting nearby tells us that we really shouldn't have done that. The boy turns out to be Mephias Laner, which is an anagram for Arthas Menethil. This image, this ghost of a boy, it's apparently the last remaining good side of Arthas, which he stabbed with Frostmourne in the novel Rise of the Lich King. Stabbing things in your mind, even with a mighty blade such as Frostmourne, apparently doesn't really kill anything, since the boy is here and he says that he saw him get rid of it. He threw it all the way down here and said that he wouldn't need it anymore. He said that it made him weak. As you follow the questline through Icecrown, you'll find out that the item that we touched, it was actually Arthas' own heart, which he cut out after his battle with Illidan. He had discovered that his heart was still holding him back. He realized that the last part of his humanity, his emotions, his feelings, being able to bleed, all of it was a weakness, and he decided that he wouldn't be weak. He cut out his own heart, he tossed it in the Forgotten Kingdom, and we were the first person to touch it since. Now Arthas knows that we found the artifact, and he will not leave it unguarded again. We bring this information back to Tyrion Fordring, and Tyrion, he was already informed by his scouts that members of the Cult of the Damned, they were leaving from Icecrown Citadel to the Cathedral of Darkness. With them, they brought an artifact, and now he realizes that this artifact is actually Arthas' heart, and Tyrion believes that as long as such an artifact exists, there might be a chance that Arthas Menethil can become a man again. We're asked to join him at the Cathedral of Darkness, where we disguise ourselves as one of the cultists, and as expected, the artifact is brought in the cathedral, but the Lich King himself has made sure to show up and keep it safe. Our disguise might have fooled the cultist, but Arthas is not so easily fooled. He immediately realizes that they have some unwanted guests, and Tyrion Fordring has seen enough. He wanted to go there in an attempt to try and redeem Arthas, but seeing the artifact for himself, he realizes that there's no redemption possible. Arthas might have an advantage, seeing how we're upon his unholy ground now, but Tyrion, he doesn't need any advantage to run the Ashbringer through Arthas's cold, dark heart. Only shadows from the past remain, there's nothing to redeem, so Tyrion, he jumps up and with a powerful strike, he destroys the heart, dealing massive damage to the Lich King, but also knocking himself out in the process. The disguised crusaders that came with us, they quickly surround Tyrion's unconscious body to keep him safe, but thankfully we're not alone. The Knights of the Ebonblade, Darion Mograine and several others, they show up, they take out the cultists that were surrounding us, and even though some wanted to stay behind to finish off the Lich King, Darion decides that they have to go. Patience is key, and for once Tyrion Fordring is actually in their depth, so they quickly retreat and they avoid the Lich King's terrible fury. Tyrion did not see any of this as a failure. This mission allowed him to see the truth of it all, to confirm that there was nothing left of Arthas, and that all that remained was the Lich King. After this moment, they held a little tournament to kill some time, to find out who was ready and worthy to join them in the assault upon Icecrown Citadel itself. The time of planning, of trying to find weaknesses, of trying to assault from the back door, all of that was over and done with. The hour of justice had come as we knocked down the front door and we got ready to end Arthas' reign as the Lich King.
Rise up, Argent Crusaders! The hour of justice has come!
Can you feel it, my son? Closing in all around you. The light's justice has been awakened. The sins of the past have finally caught up to you. You will be called to account for all the atrocities you've committed. The unspeakable horrors you've let loose upon this world. And the dark, ancient powers you've enslaved. First to be devoured by your evil. There are thousands more bound within this blade, and they cry out for release. Look now to your defenses, my son, for the champions of justice gather at your gates.
Countless abominations of the Scourge, they fell as heroes from both the Alliance and the Horde. They made their way through Icecrown Citadel, while Tyrion, he saved his strength for the final confrontation.
So, the Light's vaunted justice has finally arrived. Shall I lay down Frostborn and throw myself at your mercy, Fordring?
We'll grant you a swift death, Arthas. More than can be said for the thousands you've tortured and slain.
You'll learn of that firsthand. When my work is complete, you will beg for mercy, and I will deny you. Your anguished cries will be testament to my unbridled power.
So be it. Champions, attack!
I'll keep you alive to witness the end, Fordring. I would not want the Light's greatest champion to miss seeing this wretched world remade in my image.
The Lich King had been testing us, molding us to create the greatest fighting force the world had ever seen. All his plans, his schemes, taunting us along the way, it all led to this final confrontation. We did our very best, but the power of Frostmourne and the Lich King, it was simply too much. One single blow took out entire raid teams, and Arthas' plans, they were successful. They lay dead at his feet, all he had to do was resurrect them, and nothing in this world would be able to stand up against him. Unfortunately for the Lich King, Tyrion had the Light at his side.
Light, grant me one final blessing. Give me the strength to shatter these bonds.
One strike, the combined might of Tyrion and the Ashbringer. In the hour of need, the Light came through and Frostmourne is shattered. The vengeful spirits of uncountable souls claimed by the blade through the years, they're set free. They hold Arthas in the air while the spirit of his father resurrects the heroes. And together, we finish the job.
Now I stand alive before the lands, and they do not fear.
Fear. The Helm of Domination, it falls on the ground and Arthas has been defeated. But there must always be a Lich King. Tyrion believes that he's the one to place the helmet on his head, become the Jailer of the Damned. But Bolvar Fordragon, he steps up to the plate and he takes Tyrion's place. This means that Tyrion and the Ashbringer, they get to go home, fulfill their own destiny. But so far, they haven't done much. With the Cataclysm revamp, you can find Tyrion in his old home of Harfglen, where they're fighting against the last remaining forces of the Scarlet Crusade, while also trying to cleanse the Plague Lands. Time will tell if Tyrion and the Ashbringer will ever get to play a part in the story again, but for now, that's the story of the Ashbringer. There is, however, one last bit of speculation to do. What exactly is the Ashbringer made of? We know that the artifact, it was found from an orcish warlock, and when Alexandros found it, it was pure darkness. Later, they infused it with the holy light, it turned to the light side again, only to turn to darkness once Renaud betrayed his father. It's uncertain what exactly the artifact was, but it seems like it came with the orcs from the planet of Draenor. A similar cycle of light and darkness can be found within the game, since the Naru, they show a very similar thing. Naru are beings of pure light, but we've seen several that turn to darkness, because they either fell ill, or in the case of Mauru, because the Blood Elves drained his light. But over time, Naru are able to regain their light. A most recent example is the Naru Ka'ara on Draenor, which Ner'zhul tried to call upon. They called it the Dark Star. Velen stepped in, sacrificed his own being, his own light, and he turned Ka'ara back into her holy state. With Mauru and the Blood Elves, we've seen what happened when you push a Naru even further. Since Mauru, he was so drained that he turned to a void god called Entropius. If you want more details about the Naru, then please check out my video about the Naru, but the whole cycle of light and darkness, it seems very similar to what happened with the Ashbringer. Unfortunately, we don't know for certain. Maybe Blizzard will ever give a clear answer about this, but for now, I personally think that the Naru theory is a solid one. Which Naru is hard to say. Some say it's the Naru Ka'ara, but it could be anything, to be honest. It could be any Naru. It doesn't necessarily have to be a Naru at all. Some speculate that it's one of the Atamal crystals that they used. Velen brought 7 crystals with him, all had different powers. We simply don't know, but what we can be certain about is that the Ashbringer is one hell of a weapon. It truly was a scourge against the scourge. Even though they tried to get it to the dark side, the light prevailed and ultimately meant the destruction of Frostmourne and the downfall of Arthas himself. I truly hope that we'll get more story with all of this, perhaps something involving Sylvanas, Bolvar, Tyrion, Knights of the Ebonblade, Lady Leodrin. All that good stuff, I really hope that we'll get more. I also wonder if we'll ever see the vision that Velen has seen. If you've read Velen's short story, you know that he saw a vision for Anduin Rin. A vision of a possible future, perhaps, where Anduin, he was fighting in armor and weapons infused with the light itself. And when I was reading the storyline, it felt to me like Anduin was wielding the Ashbringer. I think that could be really, really cool, but only time will tell what Blizzard is going to do with the story. But for now, that's the end of my video. Thank you very much for watching, everyone. I truly had a lot of fun talking about the Ashbringer, and I hope you enjoyed it as well. Subscribe if you like my videos, and until next time, guys. See ya!
Put your faith in the light, and all is possible.
Put your faith in the light!